I'll do it with pleasure, Mr. Bear. I'm going very fast, and he's getting dearer every minute, added Jo to herself. Then, with a mental shake, she entered into the business with an energy which was pleasant to behold. Mr. Bear left it all to her, so she chose a pretty gown for Tina, and then ordered out the shawls. The clerk, being a married man, condescended to take an interest in the couple, who appeared to be shopping for their family. "Your lady may prefer this. It's a superior article, a most desirable color. Quite chaste and genteel," he said, shaking out a comfortable gray shawl and throwing it over Joe's shoulders. "Does this suit you, Mr. Bear?" she asked, turning her back to him and feeling deeply grateful for the chance of hiding her face.
"Excellently well. We will have it,"
answered the professor, smiling to himself as he paid for it, while Joe continued to rummage the counters like a confirmed bargain hunter.
"Now shall we go home?"
he asked, as if the words were very pleasant to him. "Yes, it's late, and I'm so tired." Joe's voice was more pathetic than she knew, for now the sun seemed to have gone in as suddenly as it came out. The world grew muddy and miserable again, and for the first time she discovered that her feet were cold, her head ached, and that her heart was colder than the former, fuller of pain than the latter. Mr. Bear was going away. He only cared for her as a friend. It was all a mistake, and the sooner it was over, the better. With this idea in her head, she hailed an approaching omnibus with such a hasty gesture that the daisies flew out of the pot and were badly damaged.
"This is not our omnibus," said the professor,
waving the loaded vehicle away and stopping to pick up the poor little flowers. "I beg your pardon, I didn't see the name distinctly. Never mind, I can walk. I'm used to plodding in the mud," returned Jo, winking hard, because she would have died rather than openly wipe her eyes. Mr. Bear saw the drops on her cheeks, though she turned her head away. The sight seemed to touch him very much, for suddenly stooping down, he asked in a tone that meant a great deal, "Heart's dearest, why do you cry?" Now, if Jo had not been new to this sort of thing, she would have said she wasn't crying, had a cold in her head, or told any other feminine fib proper to the occasion. Instead of which that undignified creature answered with an irrepressible sob,
"Because you are going away."
"Ach, mein Gott, that is so good," cried Mr. Bear,
managing to clasp his hands in spite of the umbrella and the bundles.
"Joe, I have nothing but much love to give you. I came to see if you could care for it, and I waited to be sure that I was something more than a friend. Am I? Can you make a little place in your heart for old Fritz?"
he added all in one breath.
"Oh, yes," said Jo,
and he was quite satisfied, for she folded both hands over his arm and looked up at him with an expression that plainly showed how happy she would be to walk through life beside him, even though she had no better shelter than the old umbrella, if he carried it. It was certainly proposing under difficulties, for even if he had desired to do so, Mr. Bear could not go down upon his knees on account of the mud. Neither could he offer Joe his hand, except figuratively, for both were full. Much less could he indulge in tender demonstrations in the open street, though he was near it. So the only way in which he could express his rapture was to look at her, with an expression which glorified his face to such a degree that there actually seemed to be little rainbows in the drops that sparkled on his beard. If he had not loved Jo very much, I don't think he could have done it then, for she looked far from lovely, with her skirts in a deplorable state, her rubber boots splashed to the ankle, and her bonnet a ruin. Fortunately, Mr. Bear considered her the most beautiful woman living, and she found him more Jove-like than ever, though his hat brim was quite limp with the little rills trickling thence upon his shoulders, for he held the umbrella all over Joe, and every finger of his gloves needed mending. Passers-by probably thought them a pair of harmless lunatics, for they entirely forgot to hail a bus, and strolled leisurely along, oblivious of deepening dusk and fog. Little they cared what anybody thought, for they were enjoying the happy hour that seldom comes but once in any life, the magical moment which bestows youth on the old, beauty on the plain, wealth on the poor, and gives human hearts a foretaste of heaven. The professor looked as if he had conquered a kingdom, and the world had nothing more to offer him in the way of bliss. While Joe trudged beside him, feeling as if her place had always been there, and wondering how she ever could have chosen any other lot. Of course she was the first to speak, intelligibly, I mean, for the emotional remarks which followed her impetuous "Oh, yes," were not of a coherent or reportable character.
"Friedrich, why didn't you—" "Ah, heaven! She gives me the name that no one speaks since Minna died," cried the professor, pausing in a puddle to regard her with grateful delight. "I always call you so to myself. I forgot. But I won't unless you like it."
"Like it? It is more sweet to me than I can tell. Say thou also, and I shall say your language is almost as beautiful as mine."
"Isn't thou a little sentimental?" asked Joe,
privately thinking it a lovely monosyllable.
"Sentimental? Yes, thank God. We Germans believe in sentiment, and keep ourselves young with it. Your English you is so cold. Say thou, heart's dearest. It means so much to me," pleaded Mr. Bear, more like a romantic student than a grave professor.
"Well, then, why didn't thou tell me all this sooner?" asked Joe bashfully.
"Now I shall have to show thee all my heart, and I so gladly will, because thou must take care of it hereafter."
"See then, my Joe. Ah, the dear funny little name. I had a wish to tell something the day I said goodbye in New York, but I thought the handsome friend was betrothed to thee, and so I spoke not. Wouldst thou have said yes then, if I had spoken?"
"I don't know. I'm afraid not, for I didn't have any heart just then."
"Pooh! That I do not believe. It was asleep till the fairy prince came through the wood and waked it up." "Ah, well, die erste Liebe ist die beste. But that I should not expect."
"Yes, the first love is the best, so be contented, for I never had another. Teddy was only a boy, and soon got over his little fancy," said Joe, anxious to correct the professor's mistake.
"Good. Then I shall rest happy, and be sure that thou givest me all. I have waited so long. I am grown selfish, as thou wilt find, Professorin."
"I like that," cried Joe, delighted with her new name. "Now tell me what brought you at last, just when I most wanted you."
"This."
And Mr. Bear took a little worn paper out of his waistcoat pocket. Joe unfolded it and looked much abashed, for it was one of her own contributions to a paper that paid for poetry, which accounted for her sending it an occasional attempt.
"How could that bring you?" she asked, wondering what he meant.
"I found it by chance. I knew it by the names and the initials. And in it there was one little verse that seemed to call me. Read and find him. I will see that you go not in the wet."
Joe obeyed and hastily skimmed through the lines which she had christened. "In the garret. Four little chests all in a row, dim with dust and worn by time, all fashioned and filled long ago by children now in their prime. Four little keys hung side by side with faded ribbons, brave and gay when fastened there, with childish pride, long ago, on a rainy day, four little names, one on each lid, carved out by a boyish hand, and underneath there lieth hid histories of the happy band, once playing here, and pausing oft to hear the sweet refrain that came and went on the roof aloft in the falling summer rain.